From Pacifica Radio, this is Democracy Now! Will the world's longest ruling party remain in power? Today, a special on this weekend's presidential elections in Mexico. We'll go to Tijuana, Mexico City, and look at the Zapatistas' roots of rebellion in Chiapas. All that and more coming up on Pacifica Radio's Democracy Now! Welcome to Democracy Now! I'm Amy Goodman. A fire has scorched nearly half the Hanford Nuclear Reservation in Washington State, 20 homes as it crept within 2 miles of some of the most lethal nuclear waste on Earth. Thousands of people fled as the fire blackened 190,000 acres and destroyed more than 70 buildings. 15 people have been injured, one seriously. The fire at sprawling site in southern Washington was sparked Tuesday by a fatal car crash. Hanford contains the nation's largest volume of radioactive waste from nuclear weapons. The fire was about 3 miles from highly radioactive material in an area that once handled spent nuclear fuel. This is the second time in 2 months that wildfire threatened a U.S. nuclear site. In May, it was Los Alamos. Days after scientists announced the decoding of the human genome, the Senate rejected Democratic legislation that would let people sue for discrimination if genetic information is misused in the workplace or by insurance companies. The Senate yesterday gave final approval to legislation to force secretive tax-exempt groups to disclose their political spending and donors, ensuring enactment of the first new campaign finance restrictions in 2 decades. The bill cleared both houses by big margins after Republican leaders decided to cut their losses and abandon their resistance. It now goes to President Clinton, who has said he will sign it. Federal judges took more than a dozen expense-paid trips to seminars put on by conservative groups, but failed to disclose the resort trips on their annual financial reports, as required by federal ethics laws. This in another expose in the Washington Post. The excursions, some of which lasted 2 weeks and cost thousands of dollars, were devoted to discussions of economics and the environment. But the privately financed sessions also offered judges time for golf and horseback riding at the island resort and historic Western retreats where they were held. The judicial seminars have become controversial since the Washington Post reported on them 2 years ago. Some public interest groups have called for judges to turn down the trips, complaining the sponsors accept funding from corporate foundations and conservative organizations that have an interest in federal litigation. Death row prisoner Jesse Carlos San Miguel was executed by injection in Texas yesterday. Convicted of a 1991 Dallas-area robbery that left 4 people dead. San Miguel was the 5th Texas prisoner to be executed this month and the 24th this year. His attorneys contend he was unfairly convicted because of Mexican-American racial stereotyping. This comes a week after the execution of Gary Graham, also known as Shaka Sankofa. The African-American was put to death despite a conviction with only one eyewitness and an incompetent defense lawyer. His funeral was held yesterday in Texas. The Reverend Jesse Jackson says he's been assured by federal and state authorities in Mississippi that sufficient manpower is being used to investigate the hanging death of a black Mississippi teenager. Raynard Johnson, 17 years old, was found hanging from a pecan tree a few yards from the front door of his rural Marion County home June 16th. Officials said autopsy findings were consistent with suicide, but Johnson's family questions the ruling and called on Jackson and others to demand a federal investigation. Jackson also said yesterday he believes there are suspects in the case, although officials have refused to confirm or deny this. Reverend Jackson added that many things point to a racially motivated killing, including the fact that Johnson and his brother had been friends with 2 17-year-old white girls. A Texas man sentenced to 16 years in prison for stealing a candy bar has been granted a new trial. Kenneth Payne III, is 29 and has a history of 10 convictions and was on parole last December when a grocery store owner saw him stuff a Snickers bar in his pants. Payne's lawyer says prosecutors wrongly bumped the crime up from simple shoplifting to felony theft. Yesterday, a judge in Tyler, Texas, agreed. He also ruled that jurors had unfairly considered Payne's failure to testify in his own behalf. If convicted again in his new trial, Payne could still get up to 2 years in prison. His past convictions include one for stealing a bag of Oreos. A former Annapolis midshipman accused of being gay is appealing a decision by the Navy that he has to repay the cost of his education. Tommy Lee Watkins was a member of the class of 98, but resigned a year early when the Navy launched an investigation into allegations that he's gay. Homosexual behavior is prohibited in the military. The Defense Department has decided the government cannot recoup money from midshipmen who leave because they are gay, but the Navy says Watkins resigned without expressly stating that he's gay. You're listening to Pacifica Radio's Democracy Now! I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez.
Good day, Amy, and to our listeners around the country. And it's been a momentous week in Latin America. We've had, in the last few days, we've had Elian Gonzalez returned to Cuba, finally. We've had the first ever meeting of a United States president with all of the different political leaders of Puerto Rico, which happened at the same time that Elian Gonzalez was flying back. President Clinton met with all the Puerto Rican leaders to discuss a possible final resolution to the status issue in Puerto Rico. While hundreds had been arrested over the Vieques protest, we've had Congress approve or the House finally reapprove a $1.3 billion aid package to Colombia. And now, of course, we're going to have the elections in Mexico. Huge events for all of those countries.
And that last point, Juan, is what we're going to be addressing today on Democracy Now! Will the world's longest ruling party remain in power? That's the question that'll be answered in Mexico this weekend with Sunday's presidential election. A victory by opposition candidate Vicente Fox and his right-wing National Action Party, known as PAN, could end the PRI's rule over the last 71 years. The last polls released before the election show Fox running just behind pre-candidate Francisco Labastida, but within the statistical margin of error. A third candidate, Cuauhtemoc Cárdenas of the Progressive Democratic Revolutionary Party, known as the PRD, is most favored by independent unions and peasant organizations. He's running third in the polls, but could draw enough anti-PRI votes away from Fox to hand victory to the ruling party. By Mexican law, the campaigns ended Wednesday, and the candidates can't run advertisements, hold rallies, or give interviews until the elections on Sunday. This is a race in Mexico that has adopted U.S.-style campaign tactics. In fact, President Clinton's Dick Morris did some advising for Vicente Fox of the PAN party, while Stanley Greenberg, a Democratic consultant, advised the PRI's candidate Labastida. Vicente Fox has conducted much of his campaign on a platform calling for change after what he says were seven decades of corruption, cronyism, and single-party rule. But Francisco Labastida insists the PRI he represents is a new, improved, and more democratic party. In a biting comment he wrote a few years ago, noted Mexican author Carlos Fuentes said that, quote, like all good brothels, the PRI has lived off the pleasures it provides, stability in this case, and despite its reputation for constant fraud. No other party currently in power elsewhere in the world has governed as long as the PRI. If reelected, it'll beat the all-time record set by the Soviet Communist Party, which ruled for just over 74 years. Well, today we're going to go around Mexico to get an analysis of what is going on and the significance of this weekend's elections. And we're going to begin with Victor Clark. He is director of the National Center for Human Rights in Tijuana, Mexico, and a professor at the State University of California, Baja, joining us from Tijuana. Welcome to Democracy Now, Victor Clark.
Hey, good morning.
Well, Victor, could you start by telling us, I was in Mexico a few years back when Cuauhtemoc Cárdenas ran and was elected mayor of Mexico City. He was considered, had a tremendous possibility for being elected president. It's considered that several elections ago, the race was actually stolen from him by the PRI. What has happened to Cárdenas that he has fallen so much in polls in terms of his standing within Mexican society?
Victor Clark, are you there? Victor Clark. Well, we'll go right back to you, but let's put that question to Rogelio Gomez, national coordinator of Alianza Cívica, or the Civic Alliance, Mexico's leading civic watch group. Rogelio Gomez.
Yes, hello.
It's good to have you with us from Mexico City.
Yes.
Were you, I don't know if you heard the question I just asked, Victor.
You were asking if why Cuauhtémoc Cárdenas is down in the polls?
Yes.
Oh, well, that's not our... the part of the things we saw, but well, I think that the citizens are trying in a contest in this election, trying to be like more like a plebiscite, which candidate is can have the opportunity to win to the PRI. I think that's the main reason. The other one is that the government in Mexico City, I think, affected Mr. Cárdenas in his image, in his his attraction to people, because a government in a city like this is very difficult. And he had a lot of pressure from some newspapers, and the TV networks were very critical to his administration. I think that those two are the most important factors, I guess.
Rogelio Gomez, you said that it wasn't your understanding that Cuauhtémoc Cárdenas was down in the polls. Is that right? Your group, Civic Alliance, monitoring this weekend's election?
Yeah, no. No, I'm sorry. What I try to say is to have an opinion on candidates and political parties is not part of our role. I'm sorry. No, we don't have any indication that he's not the third place.
Could you explain a little bit about what Alianza Cívica tries to do in Mexico?
Yeah, we're monitoring since May. We prepared a project dealing with the previous condition of election. We have 2,500 observers all over the country visiting these poor rural areas and urban marginalized areas, trying to detect if the social programs were being used to make pressure on people, to coerce people in their votes, because we know that happened before. We have been observing elections since 1994, and we know that that was the particular issue that wasn't addressed by our electoral reforms that made a lot of changes, that gave us a new federal electoral institute. But these pressures to poor people were the thing that could be the most important irregularity. So we were watching on this, and, well, this is what we have been doing these months to prepare the election.
Rogelio Gomez, we are also joined by John Ross, who is an independent journalist based in Mexico City. This is his fourth Mexican presidential election. He's written a number of books on Mexico, including Roots of Rebellion, about the Zapatistas. We're going to be going to him, as well as to David Huey, who is coordinator of the Global Exchange Election Observation Mission in Mexico. Global Exchange has just released a report on the pre-electoral conditions in Mexico. But before we do that, Juan has another question for you, Rogelio Gomez.
Rogelio, in terms of the transparency of the previous elections that your Alianza Cívica has covered, what is What is your estimate in terms of the degree of problems there have been and the actual results in the past? And what is different about this election that can give both the Mexican people and observers from around the world a sense of confidence that democracy and free elections are actually progressing in Mexico?
There has been a great change in Mexico in relation to previous presidential elections. There is a major change dealing with the organization of the election. The mechanics, the procedures are now in charge of a federal electoral institute that is autonomous from government and from the political parties. They have gained the trust of society and from all the political actors. We agree in this trust. We think it's a great change to know that the votes will be counted correctly, that the lists of the registration of voters is complete and correct, that our credentials work and can't be misused. So more or less we can say that everything dealing with procedures, mechanics, the organization of the election is in charge of a trustworthy institute. And that's a major big change for Mexico. I know you can say that. So our concern deals with the paradox. Although the votes will be counted correctly, we don't know if every of the votes could be a free vote, because we have denounces from many places in the rural areas and in some urban areas saying that there has been coercion, that people are being threatened, telling them that if they don't vote for the PRI, they would lose their social aid, these kind of subsidies that are very widespread in Mexico to combat poverty. And that's our main concern now, that the votes will be counted, but maybe not every of those votes would be free votes.
Rogelio Gomez, as I said, we're also joined by David Huey of Global Exchange, which has just put out a report on the pre-electoral conditions in Mexico. What were your overall findings, David Huey?
Our main concern right now is that the kind of electoral crimes that, and irregularities that Rogelio just mentioned, there's no proper system for investigating and punishing those crimes. The Special Federal Prosecutor for Electoral Crimes only has 65 agents in the whole country, one permanent office in Mexico City and five temporary regional offices. There's clearly not the kind of infrastructure needed to be a preventive force against this kind of activity. We visited five or six poor regions in Mexico. 60 million people in Mexico live in poverty, 20 million of those in extreme poverty. We're concerned that the kind of vote buying and coercion that Rogelio just mentioned is pretty widespread in for rural communities. So we visited the Yucatan, Huasteca region, Chiapas, Oaxaca, and Guerrero, and the state of Mexico. And we discovered a number of irregularities in terms of public officials using federal programs to foment the vote in favor of the PRI.
In a minute, when we come back from the break, we're going to talk about the significance of the Zapatista uprising and continued activity, particularly in the Chiapas region. But David Huey of Global Exchange, what about the large military presence and existence of paramilitary groups and how they might affect the elections?
Obviously, that's a big concern for non-governmental organizations who are keeping an eye on things in Chiapas. We don't know exactly how many troops are in Chiapas. The estimates go between 30 and 60,000. But in key areas like the highlands of Chiapas, they're a very intimidating presence. You can't travel anywhere without coming across military roadblocks. Any one of these roadblocks, indigenous people who support the Zapatista movement know that something unfortunate could happen to them. Even more of a concern is the activity of paramilitary organizations that don't seem to be under any kind of central command whatsoever. And there have been violent incidents registered very recently in Chiapas that create a climate of tension and fear meaning that many people don't want to leave their communities. But what we have seen is that the IFE is at least making efforts to place special polling stations in communities that don't want to travel.
The IFE being the Federal Electoral Institute. We have to break for stations to identify themselves. We're talking to David Huey of Global Exchange in Mexico City, put out a report on the pre-electoral conditions in Mexico. Also, Rogelio Gomez, National Coordinator of Alianza Cívica, Mexico's leading civic watch group, which is monitoring this weekend's election, also speaking to us from Mexico City. And we'll be going to John Ross, independent journalist there, who has specifically been looking at the Zapatistas. You're listening to Pacifica Radio's Democracy Now! Stay with us. You are listening to Pacifica Radio's Democracy Now!, the exception to the rulers. I'm Amy Goodman here with Juan Gonzalez as we go to Mexico City to talk about these historic elections that will be taking place on July 2nd. It could mean the end of the ruling party's rule in Mexico. That's the the Institutional Revolutionary Party has been in power for 71 years. The major candidates right now, the pre-candidate Francisco Labastida, the PAN party candidate, the right-wing party, is Vicente Fox, and the PRD candidate, that's the Progressive Democratic Revolutionary Party candidate, is Cuauhtémoc Cárdenas. As Juan said earlier, many believe the election was stolen from him years ago.
Yes, I'd like to go back to Rogelio Gomez of the Alianza Cívica and ask you, how is the election process in Mexico carried out? Do people vote in by paper ballot? Are there machines, voting machines? How is the actual process, and where are the greatest problems in terms of potential fraud or vote rigging or vote buying?
Okay, well, the procedure is very simple. It's paper ballots. Every citizen must go to its voting site. We have 113,000 voting sites all over Mexico. So every voting site could have at most 750 voters. So in most areas, it's very close to their actual address or home. And, the voting takes place from 8 a.m. to 6 p.m., and at that time the vote sites are closed and the vote counting takes place there. The people in charge of the voting sites is citizens appointed by the Electoral Institute. The main concerns in this election, well, let me say something. We don't expect any big irregularities. It can't be done. It's very difficult that a major fraud like 1998, as you were saying, could take place. So, but some concerns could be, one, if these people, the citizens in charge, the officials of the voting sites, could really attend and don't be changed in last-minute change because, well, they could be in charge. Secondly, that the people can vote freely, without any pressure that anybody trying to make coercion on them, that they can vote in secret. This is very important if we take in charge that the pressures have been taking place all of these previous weeks before. And then that the votes are counted, well, but well, that's easier, that the votes are counted, well, that every party, every candidate gets their actual votes. That's the three things that our observers, we will have 3,000 people observing these voting sites with a sample, a statistical sample, to know what is the quality of this election will take place in the 2nd of July.
Rogelio Gomez, we're also joined by John Ross in Mexico City, who's coming out with a book very soon called The War Against Oblivion, Zapatista Chronicles, 1994 to 2000. John Ross, welcome to Democracy Now!
Welcome, Amy. Thanks a lot. Before I begin any kind of opinion, just I'd like to invoke the Michael Moore clause here and say that I'm doing this for Democracy Now! And not for the undemocratic board of directors of the Pacifica Foundation.
Well, John, I wanted to ask you about the Zapatistas and the effect that they are having today in the year 2000 on these elections.
Mm-hmm. Well, the Zapatistas, of course, are not great fans of the electoral process. You know, in a number of elections since 1994, they've actually been opposed to local balloting and the federal midterm balloting in 1997. They actually shut down precincts and burnt some polling places, objecting to the government's failure to enact the accords reached at San Andres Lorenzo on Indian rights and culture. They feel that the parties are corrupt, that they don't represent the people, that in fact, in indigenous communities, the parties are a divisive force. They generally endorse a process that's based on Indian uses and customs, communal assemblies, the selection of officials who will, the words in Spanish are mandar obedeciendo, who will obey the will of the community in governing. And they don't feel that the major parties do that. This year, I think it's a little different in terms of the presidential election here in 2000, the communique that was sent out last week, a very intelligent communique, actually, indicated that the Zapatistas will make no attempts to disrupt the election itself. They won't endorse candidates, but it's clear that the only candidate of the three that are running for president that they're supportive of is Cuauhtemoc Cárdenas. Cárdenas supports the San Andrés Accords. He supports a pullback of the military in Chiapas. He supports the dismantlement of the federal preventative police, which has become very active in Chiapas, and has promised on the first day of his administration to go to Chiapas and to sign off on the accords and move on an Indian rights law. But the Zapatistas, again, do not endorse candidates, and they won't endorse Cárdenas. They're very critical of the other candidates as well. Indeed, if Francisco Labastida were to be elected president, the Zapatistas have, in a number of communiques recently, indicated that they feel that they're in great danger. Labastida had a terrible record as the Interior Secretary. He torpedoed the accords. He came in right after the Acteal massacre and whitewashed the Acteal massacre. He ordered the dismantlement of a number of Zapatista autonomous municipalities. And they feel that Ernesto Zedillo will use the time until his term is up to clean up the Zapatista situation and pave the way for a Labastida presidency.
The Acteal massacre was?
In December of 1997, in which 46 Tzotzil Indian supporters of the Zapatista Army of National Liberation were massacred in the highlands of Chiapas. Might add that also Vicente Fox poses a great problem for the Zapatistas because he's got no relationship with the military, which means that the military will have to define its influence in any coming administration. And the way they do it is by flexing their muscle, and their muscle is concentrated in Chiapas at this point. So it's another situation that could be very dangerous for the UZLN.
So I'd like to ask Rogelio Gomez, because I understand you're going to have to leave us soon. There have been reports here in the United States that some of the American firms that are down there involved in the elections in one way or another, for instance, Penn Shone, are sponsoring an exit poll that will be coming out actually before any results that are being put out by anyone in Mexico. And there have been concerns about where Penn and Shone is getting its money to do this. And has there been concern in civil society there about the influence of these foreign political consultants and political operations in Mexico?
Well, there is some concern, especially dealing with the exit polls, because the law is clear. Anyone can give results before 8 p.m., 2 hours, when the last horario is closed in Baja California. And also because everybody knows here that it will be a very close difference election. It will be very tight, probably. And the statistical margin of these exit polls is always big. And the possibility that an exit poll is not the actual vote of the voters in Mexico is a real possibility. So, yes, there is some concern. Everyone here is saying that they will be very responsible. The TV networks have their own quick counts and their own exit polls, and they are saying, I don't know if they could comply this, but they are saying they will be very responsible with this, their information. The civil society organization, ASOS, and the COPARMEX, the Businessmen Confederation, will have quick counts. That's different from exit polls because it takes the actual results, are saying we are going to be very responsible and we'll say only what the tendencies are. And if they're very tight, well, we will say that we don't have any clear result. And the Electoral Institute will have three quick counts by three different enterprises, and we have their preliminary results program that is public, and every voting site is reporting to them, and is public in the internet and in the ether. They're physically and the internet. Every polling site result outcome will be public.
We want to thank you for joining us, Rogelio Gomez. We know you have to go. National coordinator of the Alianza Cívica, which is the civic alliance, Mexico's leading civic watch group, which will be monitoring Sunday's election. That's July 2nd, the day that Mexicans will decide whether the PRI will remain in power for another 6 years.
But, Amy, I'd like to ask David Huey. There's been relatively little attention to the Mexican elections, except for a few of the major national newspapers. Certainly more attention is given to what happens in Ireland or in Israel or other foreign countries. How important is what happens in Mexico to Americans throughout this country?
Well, it's extremely important who the next president is. Since NAFTA in particular in 1994, the two countries have been in a closer and closer relationship economically, politically, and now even militarily in terms of provision of military assistance and training for Mexican officers in the School of the Americas. Also, there are many, many problems along the border, people drowning in the Rio Bravo. That situation doesn't seem to be getting any better. If anything, it's getting worse because of the dominant economic relationship of the United States to Mexico. Poverty is not being alleviated by NAFTA. We see the situation just going to get worse and worse and worse unless there's a change of policy there. So obviously, if there's a change of candidate, Cuauhtémoc Cárdenas, for example, is likely to bring in radically different policies, perhaps not in relation to NAFTA, but at least in terms of defending citizens' rights in the United States. Vicente Fox has said that he will also defend Mexicans' rights in the United States, including trying to get them some kind of labor rights that don't seem to exist under NAFTA at the moment. But it's difficult to say what impact, for example, a Fox presidency would have. He seems to flip-flop a lot on policy issues. to answer your question briefly, whoever is president will affect people on both sides of the border quite significantly.
And John Ross,
I wonder if I could jump in here for a second. Another group of people living in the United States that this election is going to affect, I think, enormously, are Mexicans living in the United States. Let me say that there are, by the best calculations, about 7 million Mexicans with voting rights in Mexico living in the United States. Probably in any election, 3 million of those would turn out to vote. However, 1 year ago, on July 1st, 1999, the pre-majority in the Senate vetoed the vote for out-of-country Mexicans. That's a lot of votes. It's 3 million votes. These are people that are economically important in terms of the regions that they come from. They support whole communities, whole families, whole regions in terms of the monies that come from their work in the U.S., now the second largest source of dollars for the Mexican government, despite the fact that the IFE, the Federal Electoral Institute, had come up with plans to allow overseas voting. The Senate and the lower house of Congress had voted clearly to allow the overseas Mexicans to vote, the pre-Senate majority knowing full well that those 3 million votes would be cast almost entirely for opposition parties. The rule of thumb is that those people have already voted with their feet, vetoed the vote for those out-of-country Mexicans. And indeed, in a very close election that we're going to see on Sunday, those 3 million votes may be the difference between winning and losing for the Institutional Revolutionary Party.
Well, John Ross, it's clear that by looking at the papers in the United States, that the U.S. government and many of the major media in this country see Vicente Fox, the right-wing candidate, as the best hope for fulfilling what the United States would like to happen in Mexico. At the same time, though, on the Mexican legal left, there's been division. Some are saying, hey, anything to get the PRI out of power, even if that means voting for an even more conservative candidate, while others are saying, no, this is just paving the way for a right-wing authoritarian regime. Could you talk a little bit about that and the debate that's been going on the Mexican left?
I think it's the quandary. You know, in a real sense, this election may have been decided September 29th, 1999, when both the PRD and the PAN walked away from a coalition candidacy, which they would have staged a primary election. Doesn't necessarily mean that Cardenas or Fox would have been the candidate, but neither one of them wanted to step aside. Cardenas, of course, this is his last time around, and Fox will have a lot more chances, but there was division and, long-standing division between the right and the left in this country. They could not agree on a common platform, and the PAN pulled out and decided that they could win this election on their own. In a real sense, that might have been the definitive moment in this election. Every election in this country since 1997, save for one, has been won by a total of the PRD and PAN votes. They've always beaten the PRI and pretty handily. And I expect, again, if you total up the votes on Sunday, we'll see the opposition with about 60% of the votes in Mexico, maybe a little bit more than that. I think much of this goes back to to long-standing differences. The PAN is a party that was created in 1939 to oppose what they call the Bolshevik policies of Cardenas' father. Lázaro Cárdenas is the president of the country. So very deep-rooted differences here. Nonetheless, there have been moments in Mexican history, the liberation from Spain, the revolution in 1910, when the right and the left have joined forces in order to create great change here. It's just that both Mr. Cardenas and Mr. Fox did not recognize or do not recognize the urgency of the situation here and felt it was best to go their own way. It's been amazing to me that, in a real sense, Cuauhtémoc Cardenas has become the main tool of the Institutional Revolutionary Party in this race. He virtually spends all his time attacking Fox and very little time focusing on the Institutional Revolutionary Party, which the PRD holds responsible for the murder of more than 600 members of that party. I think a lot of this has been because Cardenas recognizes that there could be a hemorrhage of PRD voters to the PAN in the so-called privacy of the polling place on Sunday. So in a real sense, he's focused on Fox as being the enemy, and the PRI has kind of slipped aside here. and stand aside, I guess, chuckling in sleeve that Cardenas is doing its work for them.
John Ross, we have to break for stations to identify themselves. When we come back, I want to ask you what this means for U.S. corporations. Not only did the Zapatistas rise up 5 years ago, but also NAFTA agreement was signed, not coincidentally, on the same day. Also want to read you an excerpt of a column in the New York Times today, an op-ed piece by Mario Vargas Llosa, who is the Peruvian novelist, as he endorses Vicente Fox and has some interesting analysis. You're listening to Pacifica Radio's Democracy Now! We're in Mexico City with John Ross, independent journalist, author of a number of books on the Zapatistas, and David Huey, a global exchange election observation mission in Mexico. They just put out a report on the elections. You're listening to Democracy Now! I'll be back in a minute. You are listening to Pacifica Radio's Democracy Now! I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez as we talk about what could be historic elections in Mexico on Sunday, July 2nd. It could mean the end of the PRI's rule, possibly, the longest reigning party in the world today, 71 years in power. The candidates now are the PRI's candidate, Francisco Labastida, the PAN's candidate, that's the National Action Party, right-wing party, Vicente Fox, and the party of the Progressive Democratic Revolutionary Party, known as PRD, Cuauhtemoc Cardenas. We're talking to John Ross on the phone with us from Mexico City. He's an independent journalist, author of Roots of Rebellion and the forthcoming book, The War Against Oblivion, Zapatista Chronicles, 1994 to 2000. John Ross, what about the U.S. Consultants like Dick Morris? How did he enter the picture with Vicente Fox and Stanley Greenberg, the Democratic consultant?
Yeah, Stanley Greenberg, too, putting out these polls that showed Labastida 16 points ahead, you know. It's NAFTA. There's a subchapter in NAFTA that allows for political consultants to come into the country and do their business. And so that's... It's been a earmark of the election. This election, you know, began last June with the pre-primaries that went on for about 5 months as well, and they were really involved in the pre-primaries as well, the Dick Marses and the James Carbles, Stanley Greenbergs. But, yeah, in a real sense, it's the globalization of, you know, U.S.-style elections here in Mexico, and it's been horrible. I mean, negative advertising has come to Mexico in force, and just billions and billions of pesos have been thrown into this backbiting and negative advertising. It's buying up an enormous amount of TV time. It's different from other elections, for sure. These candidates no longer really exist. They're kind of virtual sound bites, virtual video bites on the tube. You know, that's who you're voting for, what you see up there. And the negative advertising is really a product of the increasing globalization ties between the ruling elites in both these two countries.
And John, in terms of the NAFTA, back in 94, we had the collapse of the Mexican economy shortly after the new president, Cedillo, came into power. And that's been a pattern in Mexican elections. As soon as the new president wins, there's an economic crisis in the country, and the country then rebounds economically just in time for the new election. How have the people of Mexico, have they recovered from the enormous depression that followed the peso devaluation of late 94?
Yeah, from late 94, 95 was really the main year. 95 was the steepest slide in the Mexican economy since 1932. And really, many of those factors fall back to NAFTA, its first year of operation, put Mexico in a deep hole in terms of their current accounts balance and payments on the foreign debt. Mexicans, by and large, never recovered from the 95 setback, although a number of Mexicans at the very top, or a very few number of Mexicans at the very top of the ladder, have made out like bandits on NAFTA. We have about 200 mostly transnational corporations that have done very well in terms of the in terms of foreign trade, in terms of U.S. trade since this has happened. But again, we're dealing with a country in which 70 million people live in poverty and 26 million people live in extreme poverty, meaning that they really don't make enough money each day to meet their nutritional needs. They're slowly starving to death. Yet we're going to see about $2 billion thrown into this election in the end. The creation of the EFA and the amount of money that's been spent on trying to bribe and cajole and win people's votes, I think it's an obscenity in a country that's so mired in poverty that many people in this country don't get anything to eat, that this kind of money should be thrown into the election. Economically, in terms of NAFTA, I think actually all three candidates support NAFTA. They've all decided that globalization is the way of the world at this point. Cardenas has some reservations about certain chapters, agricultural chapters, and a social charter for NAFTA that would allow migrant laborers to move back and forth across the border. But by and large, he supports it. And Labastida and Fox certainly have. It's the way of the world now. Indeed, today, Mexico has signed a new free trade agreement with Central American nations, and a free trade agreement with the European Union is supposed to kick in today if they can get the Italian Parliament to come across. So, free trade is the way of the world down here, but it hasn't helped most Mexicans.
Let me read you from Mario Vargas Llosa's article in the New York Times today, A Defeat for One-Party Rule Would Echo Through the Hemisphere. He says the presidential election this Sunday may be the most important in Mexico's modern history, the one that culminates years of democratization. Should that happen in this, the largest and most populous of the Spanish-speaking countries, Mexico now has more than 100 million people, it will have a salutary influence on the rest of Latin America. If democracy is to be at last a reality in Mexico, the PRI, whose name, Institutional Revolutionary Party, is an oxymoron, must relinquish the power it has held since it was founded in 1929. For defending this thesis, Mario Vargas Llosa writes, I have been much criticized in Mexico and frequently reminded that the essential thing in a democratic society is not the alternation of power, but that the people's will be respected in free elections. This is true, but the PRI has been in power for 71 years, the longest lasting authoritarian regime known to the 20th century, thanks to having won 14 consecutive elections, almost all of them fixed. Its encystment in the state is as complete as in the most explicit totalitarian regimes. And then he goes on to support the man who rose to the top of Coca-Cola in Mexico, Vicente Fox of the right-wing party PAN.
Mm-hmm. Vargas Llosa, of course, is most famous in Mexico for calling the pre-dictatorship here the perfect dictatorship. Way back in 1990, he was then asked to leave the country. He's been in country, actually, speaking for Fox, and Fox is much more aligned with Vargas Llosa's very conservative philosophy. But, you know, nonetheless, we have certain agreements here in terms of the importance of this election. Unfortunately, I think that what we've seen over the last couple of months, where not a day has gone by, where we haven't had very strong complaints from farmers, poor people, bureaucrats, union members on coercion and vote buying in this country, that the PRI is going to win this election by what they call a panzazo, a stomach inch, you know, an inch of your stomach, by a couple of million votes. And those couple of million votes are going to come in from the countryside, the famous green vote here, the Voto Verde, where the precincts are not very, don't have people watching, where often the PRI will win 100% of entire regions. And that vote will come in on Monday, late Monday. On Sunday night, we're probably going to go to bed with Vicente Fox ahead since he'll take the major cities outside of Mexico City. The PRD will win Mexico City once again and by a large vote. But Fox will win Guadalajara, Monterrey, most of the provincial capitals. We'll do very well, and we'll probably go to sleep if we go to sleep on election night with Fox ahead. And all of Monday, the green vote will start to come in. I'm looking at a Lavastida victory by about 2 million votes. It's not enough to convince anybody, and it'll probably engender a lot of turmoil in the next couple of weeks, so stay tuned.
And that's not new in Mexico because there's been so much fraud historically, you often have people right after the elections in different states or cities seizing city halls or occupying state capitals because they feel the vote has been taken from them. Isn't that a historical pattern in the country?
It's what we call the second election. Sometimes it's resulted in modifying the first election. What we really need here, of course, is a real second round of elections, which the free has always nullified when it's come up for a vote in Congress, where the two leading vote getters would run off against each other. Naturally, that would spell the end of the free dynasty, the longest known ruling party in the known universe. Would end their dynasty because then a coalition could be formed in the second round of elections between the opposition parties and the selection, and they would win the election.
Let me ask you, in terms of the ability of the PRI to continue to hold, have a hold over so many Mexicans, because clearly, even though they're able to fix a few million votes, they're still getting a substantial vote on their own. And I don't know if enough Americans understand the role of the PRI in the formation of the modern Mexico. And it's, as you were mentioning before, Lázaro Cárdenas and the nationalization of the American oil companies. And so that the PRI can point toward, in its past, a history of sort of representing the patriotism and the national dignity of Mexico, can't it, to some extent?
Well, I think we can say that before the last three presidents who have been neoliberal presidents whose policies have really been diametrically opposed to the policies of Lázaro Cárdenas and the people that built it wasn't the PRI back then, it was the Mexican Revolutionary Party that built the state party. The party has always been built on a corporative level so that great numbers of the sectors in the country are brought into vote rather than individual voters. In the old days under Cárdenas, as it is today, the unions were told who to vote for, and they did follow those votes. But the economic policies in the country have changed radically since the De La Madrid presidency, through Carlos Salinas, through Ernesto Zedillo, in which, in a real effect, the national revolution in Mexico has been sold to the highest bidder, has been privatized, has been sold to the transnational corporations. And in a real sense, the PRI of today is certainly not the national revolutionary parties that existed from 1928 on, and indeed hasn't been that party for a long period of time. One thing that, we need to remember are the way that the past is invoked here. For example, the PRI's colors are the colors of the Mexican flag. Still in the countryside today, people are told to go and vote the flag. That's what they see on the ballot. They see the colors of the flag, and they vote the PRI. And that's, that's a longstanding tradition here as well. When last year the opposition Congress, the lower house of Congress, which has a majority opposition, voted to force the PRI to change its colors, the PRI once again vetoed that when the bill arrived in the Senate. It's just the invocation of the past and the realities of the present are vastly different.
John Ross, we've just been joined on the telephone by Victor Clark, director of the National Center for Human Rights in Tijuana, Mexico, and professor at the State University of California, Baja. He joins us from Tijuana. Welcome to Democracy Now!, Victor Clark.
Good morning.
Your assessment of the significance of the election this weekend in Mexico?
Yes, of course.
Can you share it with us, please?
Well, it seems to be first in hope in this election because it is the first time in the history of Mexico the Mexicans are going to have the real opportunity to elect with no electoral frauds. President of our country, 123 senators and 500 federal congressmen. But also for the first time, the instruments of the elections are in the hands of citizens in the federal institution handled by citizens without the control of the federal government. And it is also the first time that this happened in our country. But I said initially that there are fears also because we don't know what is going to happen after the elections in the case pre-loss or pan-loss the elections, because there are social groups that can put pressure. In either case, in case each one of the political parties win.
Well, Victor, your center has documented over the years the human rights abuses that occur, especially in the maquiladoras and in Tijuana. Yet Vicente Fox is who holds the only hope of a change now, it seems, in terms of governing, is a big supporter of continued foreign investment and expansion of the maquilas. Is your main concern at this point that the process, establishing the process, is more important than who actually wins the race?
Well, the process has cost almost $1 billion. It has been highly cost to have democracy and also to have faith of the citizens that the process will be clean. And for me, the process is more important than who wins the elections. Because what is around all this process, it is that we have a long history of electoral frauds, and people doesn't have faith that the board is going to change really the government. So for me, it is more important the process that who wins the elections. And when you say that we are going to there is going to be a change or a cambio with Vicente Fox, I have my doubts that in the long term, economical and political and social things are going to change as the political discourse in the case of PAN or PRD, because the conditions of the country, I don't know if probably society are going to are probably thinking the changes are going to be rapidly as they are saying. But I will put more emphasis on the process because we have all this history of 70 years of electoral frauds, and this is the first time in history that people are going to change things through their vote. Doesn't matter who wins the elections.
Well, on that note, we have to wrap up this discussion. We'll all be watching the Mexican elections on Sunday, and we'll, of course, report back next week on Democracy Now! We want to thank you very much for being with us. Sorry you couldn't be with us longer. Victor Clark, director of the National Center for Human Rights in Tijuana, Mexico. Also, John Ross, independent journalist in Mexico. His new book that will be coming out soon, The War Against Oblivion, Zapatista Chronicles, 1994 to 2000. If you want to see the Global Exchange report on the elections in Mexico, you can go to globalexchange.org. That's www.globalexchange.org. Next week on Democracy Now! On Tuesday, on July 4th, we'll be bringing you our special holiday broadcast of the July 4th, 1852 oration by Frederick Douglass on what does independence mean for us about slavery in the United States. We'll also be bringing you The Best of Enemies, the story of a friendship between a former Klansman and an African-American civil rights activist in North Carolina. That does it for today's program. If you'd like to order a cassette copy, you can call 1-800-735-0230. That's 1-800-735-0230. Democracy Now! Is produced by David Love and Jeremy Scahill. Anthony Sloan is our engineer. From the studios of WBAI in New York, I'm Amy Goodman with